I am Planta on the line. This is the commentary.ca. The world is in trouble nowadays, and because men seem to dominate the world, it might have to do with a sick masculinity that's out of control. My guest now, Matthew Fox, has written an interesting book, The Hidden Spirituality of Men, 10 Metaphors to Awaken the Sacred Masculine. It looks at our image of masculinity and what the sacred masculine is all about. He also discusses how our view of masculinity has been shaped by our media, our religions, and culture. Matthew Fox was a member of the Dominican Order for 34 years. He is a scholar in residence at the Academy for the Love of Learning. He's authored some 28 books. His website is at matthewfox.org. The book is published by New World Library. Please welcome to the Plant on the Line program the Reverend Dr. Matthew Fox. Good morning, Dr. Fox.
Good morning, Joseph.
Thanks for joining us. The Academy for the Love of Learning, where is that located?
They're located in Santa Fe, New Mexico. And it was started by Lenny Bernstein and his ally and friend Aaron Stern, who is the current president. And it was an effort to reinvigorate education with a special emphasis on the arts. And my work, I guess, and Aaron told me that Lenny Bernstein read several of my books and liked them, my book on original blessing and the coming of the cosmic Christ. And so there was this kind of natural link-up a couple of years ago when Aaron and I met for the first time.
Did you get to know Bernstein at all?
Unfortunately, I never met him personally, but of course I always admired his work and was very touched that he knew mine.
Now, do you live in Santa Fe then? Or
No, I don't. I go there periodically, but mostly I'm working now with inner-city youth in Oakland, where I live. I'm trying to reinvent education from the inner city out and using especially creativity with inner-city high school youth, and we're getting some phenomenal results. It's been a two-year pilot program, but we're hoping to take it national very soon because the results are there.
You've also had a very busy touring schedule. You were in Vancouver last month, were you?
Yes, I was. Uh-huh. Yes, and I spoke on this topic at the at a UCC church, the Memorial Church.
Mm-hmm. And do you find that when you travel through, I guess you travel throughout the continent, do you?
I do, and some other continents too.
Yeah, and do you find that people are interested in the topic of masculinity?
Well, they are. Sometimes I'll put it in the context of the divine feminine and the sacred masculine. That brings more women in. women come anyway, because this is an issue for women because for a lot of reasons. One is, of course, they have husbands, sons, grandsons, brothers, co-workers. But also there's a masculine side to the feminine soul. And if what I'm saying is true, that the masculinity has been poisoned or toxic for some centuries, then it means that women too are carrying a toxic masculinity around inside of them, and they have to do some critical thinking and around this topic too, just for themselves, not just for their partners. So this really is a topic for men. One woman who reviewed the book, she said, I have hundreds of books on the goddess in my personal library, but this is the first book I've read about the sacred masculine, and she said it really wakes me up about what men have suffered under patriarchy, the price we've paid, and it's not just women who've paid a price.
You talk about the toxicity of masculinity. Well, what does that involve? I guess that's just our nature, is it, or our perception, is it, perhaps?
Well, I think it is, right. It's the stories we have about ourselves, for example, and that we pass on to the young. For example, that men don't cry, or that you solve things first by war in with the reptilian brain. There are winners and losers in life and so forth. I think these are shibboleths, or that real men eat beef, and real men smoke Marlboros and blah, blah, blah. It's all lies, of course. The man who posed for that Marlboro ad for years died very young of a horrible lung cancer. So we're being fed lies all the time, and what I try to do in this book, of course, is to offer 10 alternatives that are really ancient, that go beyond any one religion or cultural tradition, and are very positive. And like I quote this one fellow early, Joseph Jostrow, who did a wonderful book on vision quests in men, because that was his work, taking men out for vision quests. And he says that men have been looking for the Great Mother, and he says there was no mention of any positive masculine alternative to the God in the sky who's judging us and so forth. But that's exactly what I try to offer in this book, is 10 archetypes, 10 very deep metaphors that are ancient, that are positive about what a real man is. So I hope we can get into some of those, because I think that's the medicine
yeah.
for the illness that we're living under.
Now, you talk about these lies that we've been fed as to what masculinity is. Is the sacred masculine, is he... tough? I mean, at the same time, tough is the wrong word. Perhaps confident. And I would assume that the illness is that we're overconfident, perhaps.
Well, no. I apologize for laughing, but right. I'm not talking about a cashmere sweater, sacred masculine. No, I'm talking about an authentic warrior, as distinguished from just a soldier, for example. And we confuse soldier and warrior in our culture. And our journalists confuse it all the time. It's not the same thing. There's a native Canadian, first world person, who was in my program a few years ago, and he told me the story. When he came back from the Vietnam War, his elders said to him, "Now you've been a soldier. You've been a soldier. Now we'll make you a warrior." And he said it was 4 years of training to be a warrior, as distinguished from a soldier. Well, that just really should raise our eyebrows. That a soldier is not necessarily a warrior. A very different thing, and he had to go through some very severe training to learn what a warrior is as distinguished from a soldier.
And what's the difference?
Well, the difference is that the warrior operates out of the heart, has done his inner work. The soldier is given a gun and told kill or be killed, but the warrior, as Hafiz, the great 14th century Sufi mystic, put it, he said, the warrior carries his heart to the world like a life-giving sun, S-U-N, but only if he and God become sweet lovers. So the warrior is a lover, and the warrior stands up, as Harvey says, to the hooves of the past. He's willing to take on the inheritance of wounds that all of us carry, as well as the ghosts of the future, which is, of course, fear. Fear is always about the future. So the warrior lives in the now, and is willing to wrestle with the demons of the past and the future. So the people we really admire, the men we really admire, Gandhi, King, Jesus, Muhammad, Buddha, all these people did this. They didn't just settle for the wounds of the past and revenge. The reptilian brain that runs Dick Cheney and that got America into Iraq, that's your reigning view of masculinity, that you, it's the reptilian brain, it's action-reaction. But of course, that's the genius of a Gandhi and a king, is that nonviolence is not just reacting, it's thinking it through and having the courage, and that's where the warrior energy comes, to stand your ground and not return violence for violence.
Men seem to have an inferiority complex when it comes to spirituality. Why do you think that is?
That's well put. Well, that's why I call it the hidden spirituality of men. I call my book that, because I think our spirituality is hidden even from ourselves. I think there are many reasons. One is that we tend to be out of touch with our deepest feelings because we've been taught to be. We are told that boys don't cry. Well, if you don't cry, it means you're not grieving, and that puts you out of touch with your deep feelings. But also, I think that we confuse in our culture religion and spirituality. Many men are not at home in religion, and so they think, well, that means I'm not spiritual too. Or, if you want to put it another way, religion kind of captures a lot of the language around spirituality, and men who may be ill at ease with religion then become ill at ease with spirituality. Also, there's a hiddenness insofar as how many men are willing to look inside themselves and really look at our motivations. And our culture, what our culture is teaching us, I mean, just what I'm saying is, I mean, like, you meet young men, especially in the ghetto and so forth, and they're being fed constantly images a basketball player, baseball player, football player, and gangster or drug dealer, and that's their kind of picture of options as a man. And you know, that just doesn't what can I say? It doesn't link up to very many people's experience, because obviously very few can be football, basketball heroes, and the drug thing is, of course, has its own burdens with it.
We seem to be bogged down in superficialities in our culture, that we're consumer-driven, that it's a really an economic culture, that we're not our real selves. That's what you discuss in the book. Over history, over a scan of history, who's responsible for that?
Well, that's a big question, of course. The powers that be are often trying to, empire builders, of course, want to whip men up into being obedient soldiers to carry on the wishes of the empire. Of course, you who live in Canada are more divorced from the empire. If one thing, you refuse to go to Iraq, which is a blessing on your behalf. So in a way, you can get a little better perspective on this. But a lot of history, as you know, has been made and written by by those who build empires. And now, of course, the church has contributed to the empire. It cannot be denied, beginning in the 4th century. I mean, for the first few centuries, Christianity was a victim of the empire. But when it took over the empire, then it started conscripting soldiers and making men, I think, sexist, and the putting down of women was part of that. And then eventually, of course, in the modern age, the putting down of indigenous peoples and so forth was all part of the carrying out those mythologies about how some men, especially white men or European men, are superior to others and can prove it because they have better guns. So, you know, there are many stories. The media, of course, especially in the last century, has been extremely influential in whipping up stories and myths about what it means to be men. And, of course, the whole addictions to football and so forth. I mean, sport has its place, for sure, a healthy sport. But when it becomes attached to business, big business, and advertising and all that, it's part of a cycle that can be very dangerous. And what happens is that it renders men passive. We sit on couches watching young men play our games for us and living vicariously. Part of the whole thrust of my book is to get men out of the couches and become the real warriors we are. For example, the green man is a powerful archetype, very ancient. Who today, whether you're a 7-year-old boy or a 77-year-old man, is not called to be a green man? And the green man's main job is to defend Mother Earth. And that is so needed today with global warming and everything else. So men have to get out of our couches and resist the passivity that the media industrial complex dumps on us so that we can be sitting there watching football 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So that's just an example of how we could be doing so much better by calling forth these ancient archetypes of what a really healthy man is.
Well, what's the archetype of the blue man?
The blue man is interesting. Swami Muktananda, the Hindu saint of the late 20th century, said the most important meditation in his life was he saw a blue pearl that morphed into a blue man. And he said this vision of his totally transformed his life. It overcame his fear of death. It got him in touch with his creativity and with his powers of healing and compassion. Now, interesting enough, Hildegard of Bingen, the great 12th century Rhineland mystic, had a similar vision back in the 12th century. She also saw a man in sapphire blue, and she said, "This is a healing Christ inside all of us." And in her vision, there was also a pearl. And so, to me, that the role of the pearl is, of course, the reminder that a pearl is made in an oyster, an imperfect oyster. So it's our imperfections worked on by the sand and the sea over a period of time that turns our imperfections into something very gem-like, a beautiful pearl. So it's a reminder then that to be a man of consciousness, a man in touch with his creativity and his powers of compassion and healing, to be all these things, you do go through a process of purification. And every one of us is imperfect, but every one of us is a gem. And so I think that's the lesson of the archetype of the Blue Man.
And Father Sky, why is this important today?
Yeah, well, Father Sky really is important because during the modern age, we were taught that that the sky was dead, and that Newton actually taught the sky was like a machine. It was cold and dead and done. And we just had to fit in. But the post-Einsteinian physics is the opposite, of course, and we're picking up the pictures from Hubble Telescope and elsewhere. But the sky is full of life, death, and resurrection. A star is being born every 15 seconds. Supernovas live, die, and resurrect by exploding and so forth. The sky is a very busy and alive place. And why is it important for men? Because traditionally, all the traditions of the world celebrate Mother Earth and Father Sky. Now, I should say 90% of them do. 10% talk about Mother Sky, Father Earth, which is great because literalism is not part of authentic archetypes and metaphors. But the point is that in the modern age, men had to hunker down because Sky was killed. Father Sky was, we were told, was dead. And I think this hunkering down has shrunken the male soul. It set us up for the Industrial Revolution and difficulties at work, because work despoils men's souls so frequently. And what can happen now with the new cosmology and the awareness how alive the sky is, men can expand our souls once again. We can get out of these boxes that we've been in during the Industrial Revolution, and we can grow. And that's incredibly important because, well, as Thomas Aquinas said in the 13th century, every human being is capable of the universe. And we have to find this connection to the universe in order to be whole again, to be peaceful, to invest our passions, whether of moral outrage and anger or of joy and beauty. There's now a great space again that can absorb them, and that is the sky, Father Sky.
Now, are you an optimistic person that will get away from the what you termed earlier the media industrial complex, that will have a greater connection to the universe? Do you foresee that in the future, the near future, that we'll be able to become more connected, perhaps?
Well, definitely, if the new science is allowed to permeate our educational systems, in our media, in our theater, in our art, our music, and our films, in other words, in our religions, if we can get the cosmology of the living Father Sky alive again. And I think we're very close to that because we're killing the Earth and ourselves by following this idea of the mechanistic universe and the mechanistic sky and Earth. And obviously all this is shifting. It's not working for us. So part of my hope, I wouldn't call it optimism, actually comes out of the despair of our times. Paradigm shifts happen when people are desperate, when the previous way of looking at the world isn't serving us anymore. And I think more and more people, especially the younger generation, are beyond naivete and recognize that the stories we've been given of late are simply not applicable. And I think it's one reason why there is such a crisis in education and a crisis in worship and religion, because the former forms are not working. And we have to kickstart new versions of education, religion, media, telling the stories in order to bring optimism back, to bring the joy of life alive again. And part of this is bringing the goddess back. That's part of my optimism, is the revolution that brought the divine feminine around again. The green man, the last time the green man was alive was the 12th century, when the goddess came into the Western culture, and he rode in, you might say, in the coattails of the goddess. And that's what he has to do again today, because together they make a proper consort, the sacred masculine and the divine feminine, the yin and the yang. We need both to be healthy, not just one. And with that there will be some action and some progress, I think.
Is God male?
To the extent we can talk about gender and God, God is both female and male, both masculine and feminine, both mother and father. And Meister Eckhart, the great 14th century mystic, said, all the names we give to God come from an understanding of ourselves. I think that's a very important insight, that if we do not allow ourselves, men, to allow them to entertain their feminine side as well as the masculine side, women the same, if we don't allow that kind of balance within ourselves and therefore within our institutions, we're going to be in deep trouble. So definitely God, which is a metaphor in itself, just the name, comes as both masculine and feminine, and neither, and none of the above, which leaves the door
Right. Pretty
wide open.
Yeah. Now, you had done much scholarship in terms of whether God was a vengeful God, and that got you in trouble with the Roman Catholic Church. Is that right?
Well, my book, Original Blessing, got me in trouble with the Catholic Church because they seem very invested in original sin. By they, I mean Cardinal Ratzinger and the people who condemned me at the top of the hierarchy. I think that there's a lot in my writing that stirs up any patriarchal consciousness, and certainly the Catholic Church today is. The Taliban, the Vatican, and Pat Robinson are all holding the same bag of misogyny and fear of the feminine, and therefore the healthy masculine. And this is why they resort so much to control, to condemning. I mean, this pope has silenced over 112 theologians. I'm just one of them. And what he's done, of course, effectively, and he did this when he was the chief inquisitor, but he shut down all thinking in the Catholic Church. And this is, of course, a very dangerous way to go. And it's showing, because there's very little creativity, very little problem solutions going on, and of course the young are leaving in droves. So it's really a transformation time when the forms of Western Christianity are melting right before our eyes, just like the Berlin Wall came down in one night. That's really what's happening. So it's also an occasion for sowing new roots, new seeds, new plants and bushes, new forms to express what was authentic in the Jesus message throughout the centuries.
And in writing this book and getting it published and speaking about it, has the reception of it been quite good?
Well, I've been pleased. It went into paperback in like 6 months or something, which is rather unusual. Usually it takes a year or so. I've had quite a lot of radio interviews and people writing me and liking it and feeling the need for it, both men and women. So I feel a certain passion that's growing around the themes. I love to do workshops too, because these metaphors lend themselves to playing and creating imagination and theater so that you can get them into our minds and imaginations and really get things changing. Because I do believe that the men's movement needs some new thinking and some new directions, and I've tried to lay out a different methodology here, building on the work of people like Robert Bly and others, but working out of a different mindset as well, and being more upfront about words like spirituality and the sacred, and connecting it to our spiritual traditions more explicitly.
This has been an interesting conversation and an interesting book, Matthew. I appreciate you joining us today.
Well, thank you, Joseph. I liked your questions. Thought out.
Thanks very much. The website for more is matthewfox.org. The book is called The Hidden Spirituality of Men, 10 Metaphors to Awaken the Sacred Masculine. It's published by New World Library. The Reverend Dr. Matthew Fox on the line in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Planta.